Blog Talk Radio.
I'd love to welcome you to Garden of Enlightenment with Louie Wildub. We will be showing off the best of the best poems from poets and late night poets who got front page picks for allpoetry.com. And we also will be doing open poetry, which I'm excited about. We have tons of SoundClouds, which is so delightful. Some of them have music and some of them, their voices, you know, it's what's so wonderful about the show is people from around the world can share their poetry and their voices, and it's total enjoyment. And also, just to let you know about ourselves, we are the group that show hosts these poems, front page picks, on Late Night Poets, and you can find us on allpoetry.com. Also, you can check out all our beautiful books. This is how these shows are paid for. They're paid for by all the poets who gave us poems to put in these books to sell to help support these shows. So that is what this money is being used for. And we want to thank you for that. So I'm going to go ahead and start picking up everybody. Tons of poetry, as always, which is always so exciting. And this is my right-hand girl, Katie. Hey, Katie.
Hello, my darling. How are you?
I'm here, like molasses, but I'm here.
Good to hear your voice. You too,
yes, ma'am. And our next caller is 707. Who am I speaking with?
Iris Rose.
Hi, Irish Rose. Welcome, welcome. How are you doing this fabulous evening?
Doing really well. Nice evening here in Northern California.
I bet it's nice and cool and beautiful out there.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Goodness.
It's warm. It's about 85, but it's just, it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's you really don't start melting until you're like over the 90s, I think. But yeah, that's beautiful weather. Welcome, welcome. And caller 585, we all know who this is. It's the man with the buttery voice, Laurent. Hey, Laurent.
Well, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing good. And yourself? Like I told Kitty, I'm here, slow as molasses, but I'm here.
Well, the day you can't answer that question with I'm here, it will be a sad one.
Oh, no, yeah. Yeah, I'm not a fan of being stuck in hospital. I hate being in the hospital. Anyway, yeah, so we're going to go ahead and let's get started. I want to shout out to Phil. She's hanging out with us in the group. And I see Silent Tree, Guts, and our new member, Geezy. Welcome, welcome. Okay, Miss Katie.
Okay, my dear. We have Enigma by Cesar Chapman. And Laurent, could I ask you to read that for us, please? Laurent, are you on mute?
Yes, an early test was successful. Thank you.
Oh, nice one. I'm going to use that. Okay.
Enigma. When night blankets the sky and drapes you behind a veil of darkness, you come out, rubbing your eyes as if awakened from a zombie sleep. You see clearly when others are aloof, as you crawl out from the pit where you were living, where you were dying. I, too, have walked amongst the dead and dwelled in mud and soot. I, too, have sang alongside red oak trees with teardrops streaming down my face. I've crawled through dark sewage tunnels only to envy more the wanton desire for thick trunks and deep roots, that I may bend in defiance of torrents that try to break your will. There exists a place, a promise of a beautiful woman with plush bosom, pleading eyes, where you walk barefoot on fields full of yellow dandelions, so ripe with subsidia, swarms the air, binding you with each step, suffocating you as you breathe. But you're not allowed to enter because the sentry beast won't let you in. The monster who strangles your younger baby self, naked and bare, squealing like a pot-bellied pig, being prodded and poked with loss of loneliness, loss of companionship, and abandonment. Your words are flaccid, your tongue sliced and swollen with poisonous memories. You mumble nonsense, regurgitating the Rosetta Stone, the blank faces stroll past you, like you're a bald troll strumming under neon lights. The inkwell is dry, and the parchment is rice paper thin. Each pen strokes tears. Each pen stroke tears it to dust. Each syllable settles on cobwebs in the attic rafters where mice scatter. And you drown in its cackling silence, dousing yourself with whiskey, blistering your hand over the candlelight flame just to smell your flesh burn, perhaps to feel something, to feel anything. You beg to enter through the doors, but some of the words come. Every poem you sing is an umbilical cord to the living, the oxygen to your lungs. Yet you must slither through the muck and the filth, hay with blood just to find the light, the glowing warmth on the other side of the pond's surface. Be brave, my brother. Let the bloodless leeches suck until their bellies are full. You will arrive in Eden soon enough. And
What a fantastic read, Laurent, on Cesar Chapman's poem. I saw that he was inspired by Countess Tamara Olga Orozco, And he got a gold medal for this, which was well deserved. And all images in here are just vivid. They're passionate, and they move you with emotions as you read, you know, read how he was inspired deeply by her writing. You mumble nonsense, regurgitating the Rosetta Stone to blank faces that strove past like you were a bald troll strumming under neon lights. The inkwell is dry, and the parchment of rice paper thin. Each pen stroke tears it to dust. I mean, his imagery in here is just spectacular, and you can feel the deep emotions in here. This is a fabulous poem by Cedar. What did you think of the poem, Katie? You're on mute, Katie.
Hello. Sorry about that. I think I've caught it from Laurent. I got you typed it. Oh, no, that sounds horrible. Sorry, Laurent.
Okay.
I said that. Oh, my goodness, me and my big mouth. Anyway, yes, this has got gravitas. This is deep. Obviously, it's fabulous. What am I saying that for? We know it is. But when night blankets the sky and drapes you behind a veil of darkness, you come out, rubbing your eyes as if awakened from a zombie sleep. You see clearly when others are aloof, as you call out from the pit where you were living, where you were dying. Oh, that's so sad. And then we have, obviously, talking about the poetess, who he obviously really admires, which is great. But there's a lot here. There's so much. I mean, your words are flaccid, your tongue sliced and swollen with poisonous memories. Beautiful lines. Yes, very well done. Thank you, Cedar, for sharing that with us.
Great. And I would love to what you know, Gwen, about Cedar's song.
Well, my gosh, multiple layered. Okay. It's very, very layered in its depth of meaning and imagery. And I just found so much to absorb that for me to take it as a whole right now, certainly wouldn't do the writer any good, but I need to digest more. But this is just an incredible poem. I mean, totally.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah, well taken.
Excellent comment.
Taking the time for it.
Go ahead.
Enjoyed it.
Exactly. And Laurent, you did a fabulous job in reading. What did you think?
Oh, this is a hell of a poem. A tormented soul. That life is basically squashed, almost flat. The emotions are very, very strong, and they come out in this poem primarily due to his words, and you drown in its cackling silence, dousing yourself with whiskey, blistering your hand over the candlelight flame just to smell your flesh burn, perhaps feel something, feel anything. When you can't feel anything, when you are numb, body and spirit, it's very hard to move through life. But somehow we do. As he says, be brave, my brother. Let the bloodless leeches suck until their bellies are full. You will arrive in Eden soon enough. That is certainly worthy of an MVP and a gold medal.
Exactly. Thank you, Lon. Beautiful read. Always enjoy hearing you read. And just excellent comments, everyone. And we're ready for our next poem, Miss Katie.
Okay.
I just wanted to thank everybody who could not call in, and people sent in poems from different parts of the world. Thank you. Thank you for your SoundCloud. And back to you, Katie. Sorry.
That's okay, my dear. Well said. Yes, we have Winter Park Paint Out by Mark Andrew J. Terry. I'm presuming this is a conglomeration. Give me a conglomeration, a collaboration. Let's have a look. No, I don't think so. Right, I'll read this because it looks to be a great poem. Sunday, Winter Park Paint Out. Okay. Give me a moment. Okay, that was just an explanation that I got there. We have an introduction. No. I'll have to go back. Give me a moment. This is very odd. I think this is basically, this is it, I think. Right, the swans, geese, and mallards of downtown Orlando's famed Lake Elio were in foul heaven today as the sun filtered through oaks and palm fronds, rustled in a shimmering song of morning in April. I arrived promptly at 9 a.m. to assist the setup of the Winter Park Paintout's first painting demonstration. My job was to introduce the artists, Natalie Andreeva, pronounced Natalie Andreeva. Okay. The presentation was to begin at 10 a.m., but she had arrived even earlier than me and recognized me immediately. We exchanged cheek pecks, me feeling quite European, and then reviewed her biography. This is her third year in the Paintout and has won a loyal following of patrons. Her credentials are impressive, and with a little help from her, I got the pronunciation of the Serbian Art Academy, where she'd received her diploma, Novosibirsk State Pedagogical Institute. She also has studied in Moscow. Natalia moved to the USA and now lives in Tallahassee. I must sit with her at another time and hear that story. She was wearing a white floppy hat and a painter's smock and went right to work. She wandered around the area we were given by the city of Orlando on the northeast side of the lake, looking for the view that suited her muse, and almost immediately began to set up her easel. She seemed accustomed to the routine and was willing to talk as she went. In the meantime, people began arriving and selecting the best view of the action to come, many setting up folding chairs they brought with them. I made a point to introduce myself to most everyone who came, which made the formal introduction of Natalia much more relaxed and conversational. Several staff members from the museum were also there, and with solicited help from their families. Oh, how I love this passion and dedication. The artist palette was organized in dabs of color arranged by hue, cobalt, ultramarine, and cerulean, then ochre, cadmium yellow, and lemon yellow, followed by a cadmium red and alizarin crimson. Set aside was a healthy dollop of titanium white. She spread out an array of brushes and a single palette knife, and then began to prepare the canvas by washing it with a turpentine mix. I was directly behind her, about 8 feet or so, with other members of the audience. She took the stance of Venus de Milo, classic contrapposta, leaning squarely on one foot while the other was relaxed, giving her posture a serpentine appearance. Her right neon pink socked foot nestled within the tripod that held her tin easel and painter's box. Once ready, she wasted no time and began to paint. Picking up a small brush and dipping it into the ochre and a bit of ultramarine, she framed out the composition with a brevity of strokes across the canvas. That was amazing to see. She then seemed to meld into the landscape itself, working at a deliberate pace, adding colourful strokes and then using the palette knife to remove areas she wasn't happy with, in a sort of push-pull process that reminded me of how I composed poetry. It doesn't gush for me like some. I find I carve out ideas and then refine. Her painting became elegantly refined with a wonderful balance of spontaneity and purpose. I took a picture and that is what is posted above. I believe everyone really enjoyed seeing the artistry happen in the painting, as I am told was sold to someone in the audience. That is how it happened at the Winter Park Paintout. And this year's event is officially underway. If you haven't reserved your spot in this year's companion poetry competition, here is the link. Come join in the fun and experience the poetry in art and the art in poetry. P.S. Here's the wider view of the scene. Okay, and end poem.
I want to tell you did a fabulous job in reading this. Yeah, because, you know, what I loved about Mark's poem, and he runs those contests every year, and it was beautiful to see the picture and paintings that he had here that we could read and look and, you know, just admire the things that go on this competition. Several of us have entered it. I did get an honorable mention a couple of years back. I was thrilled with that. And, you know, this poem by him, you know, the tension, it is a little long. But it wasn't so long that it was like I was, you know, losing my attention. But what I loved about this is that, you know, he put attention to detail about, you know, the way that she speaks and being suburban, where she was from, and, you know, wearing her white floppy hat and painter smock. And then, you know, where they were at, what was surrounding them, how the people were coming in, and how the artist palette were organized and dabbed the color range by hue, cobalt, ultramarine, cerulean, and ochre, cadmium yellow, and lemon yellow, followed by cadmium red and alizarin crimson, which I'm not too familiar with that color, but the other colors I am. And do you know what color that is, Gwen?
Yeah, it's a very deep red.
Oh, so it's like almost a maroon?
No, it's hard to say.
A red maroon, not a purple maroon. I'll have to go look, but I did enjoy all these colors, and, you know, you could just see the painters. He made it very visible and enjoyable, and I want to thank you for running these contests. He's just fabulous, and I'm looking at all the two pictures he came here. They're so clear, where you can just see people sitting there just watching them paint, you know, fantastic.
Right, right.
What did you, so what did you think about Mark's poem, Gwen?
I thought it was a great introduction to people to the function of Winter Park Hangout and where the money goes, and the special features, and there's a lot to learn to appreciate about it, I think. You know, the special features of the area that it's being held at immediately in those particular grounds, and it offers so much diversity and inspiration for artists as well as writers. So I think accomplishes dual purposes, and I thought it was well written.
Agreed. Thank you so much. And what did you think about the poem, Laurent?
Well, it's a very interesting and very well-written prose piece that examines the minutiae of the Winter Park paint-out, both its public and private details, and the raison d'etre for the paint-out in the first place. Well done.
Great, thank you. And you did a superb job in reading this poem, Katie. Would you like to comment?
Oh, yes. It threw me just a little bit, because at first I thought, this is rather a lot to be writing in the AN. And then I realized it was the body of the prose. Well, it was lovely. As you've already said, and everyone said, it's his eye for detail. Every little piece, every little minutiae is there in there to help you feel as though you're part of it. And the paintings were beautiful that I saw. So, yes, very well done, and thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you. I'm ready for our next one.
Okay, and the next one we have is A Passion Flower in the Winter Garden by Sea Glass. And Irish Rose, could I ask you to read that for us, please?
Sure, thank you. Begin poem. A Passion Flower in the Winter Garden by Sea Glass. A white passion flower smiles at me from inside a corona of soft purple fronds, its green-leafed tendrils coil and trail, a leafless willow stem, its proud face tilts upward, steering a watery sun. And it swings and dances in the cold north wind, strangely exotic, in my wild winter garden. In poem.
Oh my goodness, this is such a gorgeous poem by Sea Glass. My mother and my aunt, when we got the home, they gave me flowers, and one of the flowers that they painted, we planted, was this beautiful white snowbell. And that one flower is just white and green, and that little dot that looks like some little girl had walked by and painted with a crayon. there's something that it just impassions me, and I get enchanted where, I just have to look and touch this little flower. And she's talking about a white passion flower. I do have passion, not my passion flowers are purple and big, and they open up. They look like little monsters, but beautiful. And this is any flower poem in here or garden poem is always going to enchant me, because it brings me back to, memories of my mother and my auntie. And I love this. I just loved how she started, right here where she said, "Sterling a watery sun, and it swings and dances in the cold north wind." And they do. They look as if they're dancing like little net skirt ballerinas, So this was a beautiful poem, and you read it so beautifully, Gwen. Thank you so much. What did you think about the poem, Katie?
A beautiful, beautiful poem. A passion flower in the winter garden. Wow. And the description of it, again, beautifully done. A soft purple fronds. Its green leaf tendrils coil and trail. I like that. It will travel around and get up and into places, and you'll find it everywhere. It sounds lovely. I haven't seen one. I don't know if I could grow these kind of things in Scotland, but I would love to. And those last two lines are just beautiful. Strangely exotic in my mild winter garden. So obviously she allows her plants to move and seed wherever they can and grow wherever they can. I like that in a garden. I don't like the seaweed roads of all the same flowers in one big bed and then same thing in another bed. Yes, beautifully done. Glass. Thank you.
Agreed. Thank you. Beautiful comment. What did you think, Laurent?
I enjoyed this brevity a great deal. It's very strong because it draws that contrast between a beautiful passion flower and a watery sun. The fact here, its proud face tilts upward, steering a watery sun, and it swings and dances in the cold north wind, strangely exotic in my wild winter garden. I have this mental image of a garden in winter, yet there is one thing that still blooms, one thing that is still beautiful and swings and dances in the cold north wind. It's a great image. I love it.
Agreed. Thank you. And I really enjoyed your comment. And we have another new caller. Call her 763. Who am I speaking with?
This is Dexter.
Hola, Dexter. How you doing?
Dexter.
Hi, all.
Welcome, welcome. Okay, so, handsome man, did you get to hear the poem?
No, I did not. Unfortunately,
okay.
I will leave a written comment.
Okay, all right then. Thank you, Dexter, and welcome to the show. Okay, we're ready for our next poem. Miss Katie?
Okay, just checking I'm not on mute again. Hi, Dexter. Lovely to hear you. I'm afraid I'm going to put you to work immediately. I apologize.
Go for it. All right.
Consider yourself fresh wheat. That's lovely. I like it. Okay, this is Drowned Fury Unfurled by Joseph Kushner, and it's over to you.
All right. This is Joseph Kushner. Since I'm fresh meat, drowned by fury unfurled. My will is ironclad, rigid as the tested battleships of yore, traversing the seasoned seas of steel resolve. Winds whip whirling, rats at the stout shards, splintered at the coming storms of the greet that greets the horizons of the gray shroud. Krakens unfurl their thread tentacles at the lonesome vessel, or its croak creaks, and I am remain afloat. Pickled pirates board my ship, killing several of the deckhands. Their bodies decorate the ship with carefree details that delight a painter. Flint locks at the ready, and the cutlass strapped to the leather-bound belt, I opened the door with blazing fury. End poem.
Wow. You did a fabulous job, Dexter, in reading this adventure by Joseph. I love his poetry. He takes you on so many different adventures. What I like was when I heard Dexter reading, and I'm so happy we got guys with deep voices on tonight to read these poems. Krakens unfurl their threaded tentacles at my lonesome vessel. Boards croak, creaks, and I remain afloat. You know, it's just such an epic, how do I say, action in a poem that we're reading, and we literally can see it in our mind. This was so much fun to read, and I enjoyed his pirate journey. Fantastic poem. Thank you so much. And we're going to do about 3 comments per poem, so I'm going to go ahead. Since he has an opportunity to comment, I would love to know what you thought of this poem, Dexter, of Joseph's.
Sorry, I missed that. All right. No, I love poems that that take you to a time, and I love historical rites. And I thought this rite brought you right to a time in history, and and the frame of mind, the winds whisk, whirling, wrath of the stout mast. It had a certain cadence to it that almost fit with the tide of the sea, or the waves rushing against the boat. Threaded tentacles on a lonesome vessel. You know, everything about this thing was whisk, and everything about this fit perfectly in the spot that it was trying to do. And I thought that this was an incredible ride.
Great. And let's get our third commenter, Katie.
Oh, thank you. Well, I enjoy anything to do with sailing and the sea. It's just the most relaxing thing, unless you're in some kind of really horrible storm. And if you're sailing and your sails get in trouble, it takes a lot to get everything straightened out again. But I do enjoy it. Never having sailed in one this big, I have to say, it looks beautiful, doesn't it? Look at that. When you think of the time these were being used, I mean, that workmanship. It's a clinker built. Yeah, that definitely looks like a clinker built boat. Okay, so yes, this is beautifully written. I like the alliteration. Winds whisk, whirling wrath at the stout mast, charred splintered at the coming storm that greets the horizon with a grey shroud. Now, isn't that just beautiful? I'm actually quite tempted to say, isn't that quite poetic? But I don't think I will. We really should. love it. Anyway, beautifully done. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, Katie. And we're ready for our next poem. I can't wait to see. These are all so different.
Aren't they wonderful? Okay, now we have Monochrome by Robert M. And I believe we have a SoundCloud for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is. And you already announced it and everything, correct?
Yes.
All right. Here we go.
This is my recital of Traipsing in Monochrome, a poem inspired by A Perfect Circle. In sorrow's eve, the heart may grieve for loss as all it knows. Fate now deems to shred the seams as the void just grows and grows. Choking on a broken dawn, regurgitating my guilt. Skies darken, miseries hearken, hope's flower starts to wilt. Petals wither, subtly slither, crumbling with unease. This vessel breaks, midnight takes the mere ash upon the breeze. Sir, nevermore ceased his lore, yet bids not his adieu. He'll watch and grin with winged kin to see this curse on through. The sable bird could once be heard, but now no longer sings. The butterflies now fate deprives the color from their wings. Beauty fades in grand cascades of melancholic monochrome. Vibrancy drained, despair unchained, now chaos is free to roam. In these eyes my light dies as my mind fights the good fight. Yet life is cruel, and this weary fool must live it in black and white.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, just fantastic, Robert. In his author's notes, he says, inspired by the song The Doomed by Perfect Circle, about a person who sees less and less beauty in the world with each passing day. Oh my goodness. So our next poet to comment, our first poet to comment, is Gwen.
Wow, this is just such an amazing, powerful poem, and it's all of its understated feeling and just in its quietness and the way it builds through the whole thing, through the recitation. And I loved this stanza, "Sir Nevermore ceased his lore, yet bids not his adieu. He'll watch and grin with winged kin to see his curse on through." There's so many great lines in this, and I just really found it to be a delightful surprise. I really enjoyed it. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Great. Fantastic comment, Gwen. And Laurent, you're our second poet to comment.
Yeah, I've always been tempted to describe Robert Amm as a misanthrope. A person who dislikes humankind and avoids human society, but not really, but after reading In Sorrow's Eve, the heart may grieve for loss is all it knows. Fate now deems to shred the seams as the void just grows and grows. He feels a void between him, self, and I think everything else. If loss is all it knows, all it's ever known is sorrow and misery, and he uses withering petals, a breaking vessel, to illustrate that. And I love the way he describes the raven as Sir Nevermore, the sable bird that once be heard, but now no longer sing. Even the raven has decided to be quiet, as we see this poet who thinks life is cruel, and this weary fool must live it in black and white. Outstanding piece.
And fabulous comment, Laurent. I really enjoyed it. How about you, Dexter? You are our third poet to come in.
Oh yeah, this is a fantastic piece. In Sorrow's Eve, the heart may grieve. Right off the bat, it starts with a cadence, you know, and I thought that to keep that kind of upkeep and that kind of draw was very impressive throughout. Beauty fades in grand cascades of melancholy monochrome. He's able to use all of the feelings and the vibrancy of our intellect into the piece, and so I thought it was very well done.
Okay. Wonderful comment, Dexter. Wonderful comments, everybody, and of course, what a fabulous poem by our own Robert. Okay, we're ready for our next poem, Miss Katie.
Okay. Now we have Dreams by Robert Pilecki. And Laurent, if I could ask you to read this, please. Are you muted?
Slightly. Dreams. Holding my dreams in grieving hands, scattered pieces of fractured glass. Dreams, broken winged, unable to fly, lying dead, crushed by boots of time. Where do dreams go off after they die? Squandered, abandoned by dulled life, scattered like paper unfurled in the wind, I dead, forgotten on frozen ground. Hold for the dreams that are yet to come, saved from the crumbling, collapsing sandcastles. Wait to be loaded, encumbered, and trotted, then burn the old torn dreams into ashes. New dreams emerge from beneath the skyline, sprouting sunflowers in monochrome days. Have eyes bright as a sunlit airstream flares, write songs reborn with new fingertips. End poem.
Oh, my goodness, you did such a beautiful reading of Robert's poem. I was looking, he wrote this to Langston Hughes, hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is broken winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. You know, and I thought he did a beautiful job at expressing this and writing about dreams that go to die. And, you know, fortunately my dreams, maybe I haven't achieved them yet, you know, my bucket list, but, you know, I do try to hold on to my dreams. Yeah, I had a bucket list. And, you know, and with this where you see people, they lose hope. Hold for the dreams that are yet to come, save from the crumble, collapsing sandcastles. Wait to be loaded, encumbered, and trotted, then burn the old torn dreams into ashes. And of course, you know, he talks about, you know, and at times, sometimes due to our aging and more experiences, maybe our childhood dreams or our younger dreams don't actually come true, but they get modified. And then we find out what our passions are. You know, I still have the same passions when I was a kid, a young teenager at the university. You know, I would still love to go to Egypt and work on an archaeological site, but I don't think that's going to happen. But, I do believe in dreams, and I do believe that they can be rekindled. This, and he brought that up beautifully. What did you think, Katie?
Oh, yes, I have a hate relationship with dreams, because mine are never dreams, they're just nightmares. But this is lovely. I like this.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. What
you have to send you some sugar.
It's a good idea, sugar. I like it, sugar. Okay. I particularly like that second stanza. Where do dreams go after they die? Squandered, abandoned, by dawned life, scattered like paper unfurled in the wind, lie dead, forgotten on a frozen ground. Yeah, it must be hard if you have dreams that you things that you want to do desperately, but for whatever reason you can't do them. And new dreams come along all the time, I suppose. Yeah, I thought this was beautifully written. I really enjoyed it. It was sweet as well as sad, but enjoyable. So thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we have our third commenter, Gwen.
I really enjoyed it. I thought that the poem was inquisitive about dreams. I liked that. And I thought he presented a great deal of food for thought and in this little brevity that said a lot.
Agreed. Fabulous.
Very inspiring.
Comment. Thank you. I agree. Thank you so much, Robert. And we're ready for our next poem.
And the next poem has a SoundCloud, and it all I've got at the moment is Seeds In. Let me see if I can get the full title. Seeds in the Wind.
Okay.
By Vamped Vixen has a SoundCloud.
Vamped Vixen, okay. Okay, here she is. Here we go. Vamped Vixen.
In Asheville, on a street corner, with antique typewriter. A young woman sits writing poetry, $1 donation per poem. Give her a word, a line, a dream, and she will weave odes on index card parchment paper, stamp it with drip wax seal, and let her poems take flight to new hands, hearts, and homes, like little bluebirds soaring the nest. This sidewalk pavement bard, busker artist of the quick draw, spends seconds to fill a poet's page and less time to recall her words, offering them up to passing tourists as if art is something to give freely. I think of that woman, her smile, fading souvenir on my fridge, and wonder how many of her poems now travel the world. Like dandelion seeds, she wished well and whispered to the wind.
Mm. Ooh. Wonderful poem that, Dixon. And if you go look at her video, you can actually see her reading it on YouTube. That's our event, Dixon. Okay. What did you think about the poem, Laurent? Vamp Dixon's poem.
All across Europe, you've got buskers, some music, some verbal poetry like this one. And some of them are good. And some of them are very good. And I have a real strong feeling that this particular poem describing the busker, in which she says, I think of that woman, her smile fading souvenir in my fridge, and wonder how many of her poems now travel the world. Like dandelion seeds, she wished well and whispered to the wind. You can see her whispering to her hand and words and letters flying off into the sky in various directions. Those little seeds that may still be blooming and blossoming somewhere on a refrigerator or tacked to a wall, or perhaps even framed. This poem's beautifully done, very vivid, and I wish this country had a greater history of buskers, because they're really wonderful people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And that was a fabulous comment, Laurent. And how about you, Dexter?
Yeah, this is a fabulous poem. Give her a word, a line, a dream, and she will weave odes on index card parchment paper, stamp it with a drip wax seal. This immediately brings you to a certain time also. This just a fantastic write in weaving in the details of a foreign time. So well done.
Yeah, she actually said, I was reading her comments, that she met this lady once. And, she was just inspired by her for her to write this wonderful tribute to her, where in the streets where people's artwork is sold. I really love to go to these places where artists can set up whatever it is that they want to set up to try, especially musicians when they're playing music and, you just give whatever you can and they appreciate it so much. And, this lady who's typewriting and just asking for a dollar for a poem, a piece of herself that she writes, and she freely gives, away for a dollar, and I can just hear her somebody says this, we're on the streets of San Francisco. Over there by the walkways where the ocean is. And I can just see this and I can hear her typing away. And that's what I enjoyed, especially where she says, I think of that woman, her smile, fading souvenir on my fridge and wonder. So she got a poem, paid a dollar. How many of her poems now travel the world like dandelion seeds she wished well and whispered to the wind, just to give birth to her poems. And for people to pay for them, this was a lovely, lovely poem. Okay, we're back to you, Katie.
All right, and next we have The Forgotten by Kiku. And I will read this one, if I can get it open. Naming the Forgotten. The tea kettle dreams of winter. Once it held summer and peonies. Peonies. I read through an old chapbook with your voice, brown-sugared imprints, soft like pictographs, left by a Chinese pond heron. Remembering it this way, you write, the world is old, but the day is new. Across the mire and rice paddies, I will name the forgotten, yellow like the mid-autumn osmanthus, because 3 hours from now, the gravity of rain will wilt them, and the furthest thing is no longer a lilac horizon nor column of sky, not the stars, sun, or moon. It is you. End poem.
I wish people could read her poem. It looks like it was written in an old typewriter. I love the format of this. It's just beautiful, and you did a beautiful job in reading it, Katie. And let's get some comments. What did you think? I know you read this, but you are next to comment. What did you think about the poem, Katie?
Oh, I thought it was lovely. I really did. Naming the Forgotten. Lovely. And you have all the things that she holds on to and remembers and wants to have in her life. And I love the imprints. I couldn't say it properly, of course. Imprints soft like pictographs left by a Chinese pond heron. You can imagine that the heron's claws are big, long, skinny things, and leaving a little imprint like that would be so sweet. It would look Chinese too, wouldn't it? Of course. I'm learning I'm trying to learn to write with. I'm trying to learn calligraphy, and it is hard, but it's fun.
Ooh.
You get some beautiful shapes, and the pen is wonderful. Because my pen has got a peacock feather in it. I put it myself. Anyway.
Oh, how pretty.
It is very pretty. But this is this is lovely. This really paints that picture that you can see across the mire and rice paddies. I will never forget. I will name the forgotten. Yellow like the mid... Oh, I'm having trouble tonight. I'm so sorry. Like the mid-osmanthus. I just thought it was beautiful. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, Katie. And you, Gwen, what did you think of Kiku's poem?
Oh, I thought it was beautiful in imagery, especially the second stanza. And the osmanthus is a beautiful flower. Oh, my God. They're so delicate. They have a real short shelf life, and like hours. And but they are beautiful flowers. And I just thought it was really put together intimately. And then I thought it was even more beautiful with the addition of just adding thoughts about the osmanthus and, you know, then the gravity of nature and how you feel it. And she goes on in the end of it, a lilac horizon or column of sky, not the stars, sun, or moon, is you. And I thought that was very intimate the way she closed the poem. So it's a beautiful write.
Great, I agree. And wonderful comment. And our third commenter is Marat. What did you think, Marat?
I think I commented on this one, didn't I?
Nope.
Season? Oh, no. I probably missed one. Oh, by Kiku, yes. The tea kettle dreams of winter once. It held summer and peonies. I read through an old chapbook with your voice. It's a lovely memory. Reference. I will name the forgotten, yellow like the mid-autumn osmanthus, because 3 hours from now the gravity of rain will wilt them. The gravity of rain that normally allows them to bloom and blossom will now wilt them. It's a beautifully written piece.
It is.
Gold winner and a silver. Yes, very nice.
Thank you. Excellent comment, Mark. And we're back to you, Katie.
Oh, yes, fine. I am here. We have Musical Medicine by Chinaski, and there is a SoundCloud with this, I believe. So, thank you.
Somebody say hello to Frank. He's feeling left out.
Oh,
hello,
no.
Frank. Oh.
Hello, Frank.
I didn't see
hello.
Him.
Neither did I.
Is he there? I didn't see him.
No,
hello,
I'm
Frank.
Hello.
I didn't see you. I know he was talking about he was traveling today. I don't know, but I said hello just in case. Okay, let me get Chinaski's poem, and here we go.
Bluenose fell out of a serpent sack, repenting all sorrows, through blowing twisted fingers, windy squalls kissing empty shores. I have become swirling, swarming, buzzing bees hovering above empty smoky bars, lipstick painted pillows perched along avenues in a sleepy French town. They rise as clouds above our hunched artists, improvising every sentence with abstract passion, beating double bass bars, looking for a thousand lights balanced between bouquets made of ebony horizon, swinging rusted signs in slow, speakeasy city streets. I'm lost in a hypnotizing weak ornament, transhealing pulse. The stage is an altar given life, becoming a shadow of witness. The tenor lifting American sorrows raises mouthpiece to mouth, suspended iron sounds into night, inhaling long ashes with swaying, flickering flames, slouches, sitting, blowing truth, helpless creature, flailing, drunk with him.
I want to thank Chinowski for that fabulous recording of his poem, and let's go ahead and start getting him some comments. Dexter, you are next to comment. Dex? I don't know what happened. Dexter dropped. So I'm going to go ahead and make a comment. I really loved his opening stanza, musical medicine. Blue notes fell out of a serpent sex, repenting all sorrows, though blowing twisted fingers, windy squalls kissing empty shores. His metaphors are always liquid and fabulous. You know, even the next stand, you know, says the notes, they rise as clouds above our hunched artists, improvising every sentence without abstract passion, beating double bass bars. Just, oh my God. Excellent poem, Chinowski. And Katie, you're next to comment.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yes, I agree with you. Beautiful. Really well done. I love this. All the sounds to do with the saxophone and the winds. It's just lovely. Just using that wind to build the poetry as it goes. I have become swirling, swarming, buzzing bees, hovering above empty smoky bars, lipstick painted pillows, purse along avenues in a sleepy French town. That just sounds fabulous, doesn't it? And then the blue notes, mm-hmm. there can be nothing more sensual than that sound. It looks like it's forced, but it comes, you know, the face as they're doing, as they're blowing, looks like it's really forced, but it comes so sweetly. Just gorgeous. Thank you so much for reminding me of that, Janeska. Thank you for the share.
Thank you. And then we have one more comment. Gwen?
Oh, I really enjoyed this, especially how he wove the music into it so well, so deftly, and used the saxophone as kind of a feature to really be able to spin off his tail through it. And I enjoyed his imagery. Every stanza has something really original in it, and that was beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I really loved the way he spun his original, you know, metaphors, encapsulizing everything. Like, I'm lost in a hypnotized weak ornament, trance, healing pulse. The stage is an altar, giving life, becoming a shadow of witness. And I thought that this was like almost, you know, so now he's going not as a participant now, but now it's becoming religion. So it's a really, really nice deep piece that really reflects a lot. And it talks about the tenor lifting American sorrows, raises mouthpiece to mouth, suspending iron sounds into night, inhaling long ashes with swaying flickering flames, slouches sitting, blowing truth, hopeless creatures, wailing drunk with them. Wow, that's a really powerful scene that he just built there.
Yeah,
it is.
Agreed.
The way he described it. Beautiful.
Yeah. Agreed. And how about How about you, Laurent?
Yes, I'm here.
Laurent?
First of all, okay. Yes, I'm here. It's a superior piece. It utilizes great metaphors. It's very atmospheric. Blue notes fell out of a serpent's sax, repenting all sorrows, the blowing twisted fingers, windy squalls kissing empty shores. That initial stanza stopped me, and I reread it 3 times. Just a gorgeous opening to this piece, which really nails the French bars, where they use music and where they're located. I speak from experience. Thank you.
Well, excellent comment. I enjoyed it very much, Laurent. And we're back to you, Katie, for another poem.
Okay. Next we have The Push Into Motion by Ben Hart. And Laurent, would you read this for us, please?
Yes, my dear, I will. Oh, Ben Hart, yes, I'm the Ben Hart reader. Okay. I don't know how many he writes, but I think I've read one the last 6, 7, 8 shows.
Wow.
And mind you, I'm not complaining, not complaining. The Push Into Motion. 1, The Stage. Follow me into the fall, into the absence of existence, the in-between of all, the well from which we drink visions, the writhing, knotted ropes. The weaving of galaxies unraveling, nebulous kaleidoscopes infinitely shattering into seeds and grains that feed the plains, become fruit in the orchard of misery. Mystery, proof there is no such thing as atrophy, only apathy with age. Nothingness is rich in the mirror of divinity because it is the stage where architects dance with contrast and distance, where stars once learned to shine, where water first met tide and together earth violence, but also peace. It's what keeps us from tearing out our eyes, where we hide our lies, and immortality resides in the passing of time. It's the journey. Blessed be infinity. Blessed be the rise. 2, The Dancer. Girl, who has her picture on my wall, are your favorite days the ones where rain casts shadows of itself on the frame I kept you in? Are you not tired of the steps, the pianist, as you scale almost halfway up the hill to glimpse the view before he sends you down again? And the rise, as if, though the push from hands on the waist turns to wings, we'll see you fall for the same false promises. The fiddler on the corner, made whose parting of notes by guiding trembling into motion, saw twilight dawn one over Paris once more as the hour grew late and you had your picture taken, and for just a lint under my fingernails, I found a way to keep something a little bit infinite, prisoner in my pocket, in case plan A fails and the dancing stops when I'm not looking. 3, The Actor. He needs to touch someone out of reach, makes him feel the drunk caress that is being alone, but sort of okay with that because it's 2 a.m., where the fuck are you going to go when the streets are asleep? He needs the quiet to exist in something to beat, to convey the echoing of the skin writhing against the drink. He needs them to believe that he's tried everything, but failed to lure them in, and he knows when he has them right where he wanted, believing something to miss the point of all the tricks, that even his character is in disguise, that all these people do is suffer for something they're not meant to get. End poem.
Thank you, Laurent. He says that he wrote this while listening to The Mystery of Love by Sufjan Stevens. He says, outside in the lonely hours. And, you know, you can really see that work. He paints and he does fantastic artwork. And his artwork is out here. I wish, you know, you could see it. And the first is where I loved how he set up the stage, you know, where he says, follow me into the fall, into the absence of existence. It almost has that Twilight Zone feel to it. The in-between of all, we drink vision, the withering knotted rope, the weaving of galaxies unraveling, nebulous kaleidoscopes, infinity shattering, you know, into seeds and grains that feed the plains and become the fruit in the orchard of misery. Proof there is no such thing as atrophy. You know, I just love his imagery. I like how he breaks it up and he takes us into a different, for me, a different type of loneliness and hope if they can find it. What did you think, Katie?
Oh, well, yes, well read, Laurent. I enjoyed it too. I thought it was so good. I like the dancer. I like that a lot. I particularly like the second stanza of that. Are you not tired of the steps the pianist has you scale, always halfway up the hill to glimpse the view before he sends you down again? I like that, asking the question. Questioning is very good. But yes, beautifully done. Very clever man. I really enjoy his work, and his artwork is supreme. Isn't that so, Bonnie?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I really enjoyed it. I like the different stages. I like the way he writes that. And I also like the doubling up of those last two lines. Blessed be infinity, blessed be the rise. Lovely. So thank you for sharing, Ben. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. And how about you, Gwen?
Well, I thought it was a really amazing write with amazing imagery, you know, and original metaphors, and which he always has. And it's always, you know, his vignettes are always just so deep. I thought the imagery was very palpable. And I love the write on, you know, his take on love and loneliness in the stage of life he's in. And I thought he did a great job. You know, so.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Thank you. And how about you, Laurent? You read this and did a wonderful job in reading it. What did you think?
Yeah, Ben's poetry is art. I mean, the truest definition of the art, as he writes and we read and listen, the images that flash before my eyes are fantastical. They're of the ordinary, they're of the sad, they're of the strength in people, they're in the disregard of people towards people. They have to do with false anticipations. One stanza that I thought was fantastic, the fiddler on the corner made whose parting of notes by guiding trembling motion, by guiding trembling into motion, the twilight dawn over Paris once more, the hour of the lake. There are, scattered throughout Paris, fiddlers on corners, buskers, if you want to call them that. It's almost a tradition. And they do greet the evening, and they play for lovers. If you walk by them, hand in hand, they'll follow you and play their violins. And it was just so true to life, especially in the atmosphere, because it was. I just thought the poem was gorgeous.
Great. Thank you so much. And we are ready for our open poetry section. Miss Katie.
This one's on her, not me.
Yeah, and the mutations. I wish I could mute my phone, but I can't.
Oh, my goodness. I was mutated.
I'll tell you who needs to mute. Somebody has a squeaky chair. Every single time
it's my old chair.
A little bit of oil.
And I do oil it. It is it's an old antique. Is it really loud?
Yeah.
Loud enough, yeah.
I thought it was my old phone.
Well, I'll see if I can get it oiled by next Monday. I apologize for that.
No problem. Right, so do you want me to go ahead with the one that's got a SoundCloud, or will I go on to Open Poetry now? Whatever you like, my dear.
Open Poetry? Open Poetry, because, yeah, it's time after.
Okay. Sorry, I thought you said we were going into about 19 minutes. I do apologize. Okay, not a problem. We're there. Well, we're not there, actually, because we're not there.
Gray showed up.
Oh, cool.
So welcome to the show, Gray. So we got another reader.
Hi, Weber. I heard Lori.
Hi, my dear.
Hey, there.
Hey, Gray.
How are you?
Hey, Gray.
Hello. Okay. I'm hearing the squeaks in my ear. They're not even squeaking. Right.
I didn't move yet.
Okay.
That was my robotic arm.
Told you, it's my old bones. There's nothing I can do about it. So this is Bon Appetit by Hope Soul. And Irish Rose, could you read this for us, please?
Sure. Bon Appetit by Hope Soul. Begin poem. Take your hands, firmly grip this feminine silk. Unravel the delicate cream thread. Pull me into. Taste all that flows through these blue veins. Let it spill down your forearms. Color the stone shade of your blackfoot tattoo with the heat that resides within me. Pull the cold steel blade. Slice open the pomegranate fruit. Expose each chamber filled with seeds. Try it and allow the areolas to fill your mouth until you're satisfied. Our bed is covered in rose petal pluck. The scent of drunken summers. Cover satin sheets. Leave your finger imprints on my back. Butterfly peacock feathers to brush your broad chest as you press your bowl against my hip. Stain my sign with your Porto wine. Deep hues, take your time. Kiss the horizons where I lay. Climb the peaks along mountaintops. Ours are pale June moon flesh, sings out in harmony. With cherry-crushed cranberries, bleeding in the dawn of the soul flares. Applauding the romance novel that I write in the clouds with French-painted toes. This eternal spirit pairs with your honey milk. It has saturated every part of my being. Drink, eat, feast on me. In poem.
Mm. You did a beautiful read of Hope's poem. I'm looking at her author's notes. I love the color red. It brings to my mind passion. I immediately thought of my partner ripping me apart and my love and want for him being exposed. The images of the black flowers made me think of the heart. The red butterfly made me think of the female black. And then the bloody flowers, it made me think of hunger and lust. This is what I had in mind while creating my poem of being devoured by your lover. And I thought that she did that beautifully well. I love the sensuality here when I was listening to Gwen Reed. Hold the cold steel blade. Slice open the pomegranate fruit. Expose each chamber filled with seeds. Tilt it back and allow the arrows to fill your mouth until you're satisfied. Oh, that just makes your mouth want to smack and just delicious imagery. This is actually a beautiful love poem of lust and hunger that she has for her partner. I really love this poem. She writes such gorgeous, sensual poetry. And Gray, I know you haven't got time to comment yet since you just got here. Would you like to make a comment?
Sure. That was a beautiful read, Irish Rose. And, you know, I really enjoyed the raw passion and desire that's expressed in this, right? You know, it's filled with fantastic imagery as well. You know, the love shines through the right brilliantly. So, excellent job.
I agree. Thank you so much. And I would love to know what you think, Katie.
Ah, hello. Yes, I thought this was lovely. I enjoyed it, Hope. Excuse me. I like the first stanza so much. Take your hands, firmly grip this feminine silk, unravel the delicate cream thread, pull me in two. Taste all that flows through these blue veins. Let it spill down your forearms. I think that's so, there's so much passion and so much heat and so much love in that particular image of you being grabbed by the person you love. Great. Well, thank you for sharing.
I'm being devoured. Exactly. Thank you. And that's three comments. And so we're ready for our next poem.
Okay, next we have Off to Sleep by Laurent. And I wonder if you'd read this, please.
Right after hopes. Oh, boy. Okay. Off to sleep. Her tongue is seductive, flickering, serpentine. Soft radiuses caress and envelop me. An instrument played by a virtuoso. White neck arches, swan shape and profile. Her eyes raise, tempting control, testing me with clever fingers. Fill me with pleasure. My flesh is your treasure. Plunder me, sunder me, ravish me at your leisure. Eyes roll as my hands grip. Holding hard under this mortal angel who paves the path to different heavens. White swan turns dark, night wings carrying me to her shadowed spaces. A sunburst softly explodes, cresting the mind. Waves of light bury reason. Bodies shuddering with tremors, aftershocks of private earthquakes, rock a shared cocoon of silence. Gravity collects its dew, pinning those two butterflies to the bed like a collector's specimen on display. Steeped in the waters of romance, their rapid breathing slows. Solemn Morpheus offers a light blanket of repose. Languid is his aura, slowly doth it creep. Twin easings he confers as he sweeps them off to sleep. End poem.
This is beautifully penned, Laurent. I love your imagery of, you know, just the title, Off to Sleep. But what is, you know, your mind's not sleeping, obviously. You have such a beautiful imagery. White net arches, swan shape and profile. Her eyes raised, tempting control, teasing me with clever fingers. Kill me with pleasure, my flesh is your treasure. Plunder me, sunder me, ravish me at your leisure. That rhyming is just fantastic. It just rolls along with the tongue, and it just made me smile when I heard you reading that. It just beautiful imagery throughout. A sunburst softly explodes, cresting the mind, waves of light. Very reason, just that the heat of the moment, just gorgeous, Laurent. Katie, what did you think?
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice. One second. Oh dear, that is bad. I thought this was really lovely. I love some of these stanzas were just so delicate. I particularly like this. I like this body shuddering with tremors, aftershocks of private earthquakes, rock a shared cocoon of silence, gravity collects its dew, pinning these two butterflies to the bed, like collector's specimens on display. A lovely idea, yeah, I think it's great. So, yes, I enjoyed it very much. Thank you for sharing.
Great, beautiful central imagery, Laurent. And Gwen, you are next to comment.
Well, I really thought it was well done. Beautiful flowing imagery through the entire poem. And sensual, very sensual. And I enjoyed the wordplay that happened in the front, the first portion of the poem. And I just thought it was well done. Beautiful. Enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Laurent. And beautifully read. We're ready for our next song. It's Katie.
And next we have It's All in the Family by Irish Rose. Irish, could I ask you to read this, please?
Yeah, I will read that. Let me get over there. Alrighty. Okay. Let's see. One moment. Excuse me, my iPad's not cooperating.
I believe it.
Oh, Lord. Okay, ready. Okay. Begin poem. It's All in the Family by Irish Rose. The nuclear family is an eclectic blend of the yin and yang, like a group of living beads strung one by one on a living chain, linked with extraordinary emotions, lives, and experiences that flow and stream from real-life DNA that runs through the body, mind, and bloodstream, often uninhibited according to familial links. Individual emotions, perfections, and imperfections slowly merge and blend. The U-Haul rolls up and unloads old bags, boxes, and full of family secrets, sometimes boxes of happiness. Others contain sadness, anger, or fear, small boxes of disgust, and old boxes full of life's never-ending surprises, filled with personal reflections and cultural pop-ups that help mitigate life. Boxes come fully packed and are personally demanding to be unpacked with the physical courage, the emotional courage, the intellectual courage, the social courage, and the moral courage, and the spiritual courage, just to remain sanely entwined and organized in a harmonic song that's sung by all, not falling apart during the dance. Single parents with big hearts that choose to walk the road alone or cut from a different path. Some are single-minded and others are survivors from the great unwinding of death and divorce. And they choose shoes that snugly fit, being aware of their steps and missteps in navigating life's rough road that's going somewhere. The extended family is a different breed of seed and lives under one roof. Grandparents, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, cousins, ex-in-laws, and dogs and cats, and more isn't always merrier. Sometimes now and then insanity grows grim, and there's absolutely and positively no room left at the end. The childless family may not want children or can't. They're usually affluent and are okay with two of everything, choosing a more self-gratifying way, free from burdens kids bring, they're gay or straight, doing their own things, gregarious, purveyors they are, of personal values and things just for them. Like driving a 2023 Porsche Taycan just to go grocery shopping, really. The step family can be a mod podge of humanity buried in deep debt, not going too fast anywhere. Paying, always paying an ex's alimony check. Hostages are taken for parent sins, kins manipulated and confused, and at times shortchanged and abused, paying for the parents' mistakes. And the train left them standing at the station, and they're going nowhere. The grandparent family can be least or most prepared for recycling kids that are hip, slick, and cool and know how to slip out of pockets quick. Grandkids don't forget that they raised their parents and they get them because they were the original originals of hip, slick, and cool. They were the ones that wrote the song and danced beneath the night full moon. End poem.
I really enjoyed this, the different types of family that exist all around us and we see, and, you know, and also we have that type of hodgepodge family. I really liked how you separated everything and then you went and explained it, you know, about the grandparents having to, and it's true, the majority of grandparents are now taking care of their grandbabies instead of their own parents, but... You know, at least they have a family. That's the way it needs to go. I liked when you talked about, you know, boxing because I'm really anal. I have to write, pack everything, and I got to write kitchen, living room, bathroom, bedroom, garage. And so when I saw that, I said, oh, this is, you know, it says boxes come fully packed and are personally demanding to be unpacked with. the physical courage, the emotional courage, the intellectual courage, the social courage, the moral courage, and the spiritual courage, just to remain singly entwined and organized in a harmonic song that is sung by all, not falling apart during the dance. I got such a big kick. I enjoyed that so, so very much, Gwen. What did you think, Laurent?
Gwen, it's all in the, I'm going to read my comment. It's All in the Family is a perfect title, and it leads off one of the most interesting pieces on family I've read in years. I love the breakdown of the different types of family. It's an eclectic blend. The U-Haul metaphor captures that moment when a family's possessions and emotions are actually the boxed and unboxed emotions and relationships that make up our lives, not the material bits that stick with us. The family types, as described, are an artful rendering of the human family as a whole, drawn from the disparate types identified. Your very clever ending pays homage to the originals of the hip, slick, and cool of us who once danced under a full moon. We remember the steps, even as we sit and watch the younger generation dance. You put a lot of thought into this, Gwen, and the results are a positive affirmation of your skills. Congratulations on a great piece.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Laurent. And Gray Eyes?
Yeah, that piece was epic. You know, it really captures all the essences of life, really, you know, and the roles that are played in it and the things that that happen, you know, good, bad, ugly, sad, you know, you really captured it all quite brilliantly. So amazing job and amazing read as well. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
You appreciate it.
And thank you, Gray Eyes. And thank you, Gwen. Fabulous piece. I could, you know, I could see myself in so much of that, and that's why I enjoyed it so much. Okay,
thank
we're
you.
Ready
thank
for
you.
Our next poem. Yeah, thank you. Ready for our next poem, Miss Kitty.
Okay, we have Ménage Trois by Poetic Castle, and there's a sound cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Their lips were pressed against each other like voluptuous vixens, bodies wrapped within the scent of their intoxicating perfume, fingers exploring the deepest fantasies of their wild loves exposed. Undressing each other with a French kiss, they began their exhibition, naked with the glistening dew of an amorous moonlight of lovers, lost in the penetrating passion of a nocturnal orgasm evoked, rubbing bosom to bosom with the erotic stimulation of touch, drenching oil, massaging the shivering softness of their skin, their moans echo the tsunami of uninhibited desires quenched, as they succumb to the seduction of the moisture of their exotic flesh, released into a 69 erogenous ecstasy of a lesbic fervor and secret liaison, until the urge to feast on appeal, plant and beg for a wanted nibble, a domestic wind excites them within their sensual arousal, a caramel taste waiting to be unwrapped slowly from its sip, as they savor the thought of being stroked by a climactic thrust, the coming of a titillating peak of a bursting eruption, a ménage à trois in Paris, a voyeur's wet fantasy, la nuit était encore vierge, le corps s'endurissait, les femmes du plancier chaunaient, le feu défendu. The night was still virginal, the bodies fed each other, the hunger of carnal pleasure, the forbidden fruit. Oh, la, la, Ola, la, in the boom.
Always gorgeous, sensuous, descriptive emotion throughout. Let's see. Drenching oil, massaging the shivering softness of their skin, their moans echo, the tsunami of uninhibited desires quenched as they succumb to the seduction of the moisture of their erotic flesh.
Oh, man. It's bad enough when you hear him read it, but then when you start reading what he wrote, then you continue to get a little bit lightheaded. Fabulous piece, Frank. And Katie, you are our second commenter.
Okay, well, just give me a moment. It was lovely and sensual and sexy as usual, as what we'd expect, of course. But I thought that couple of stanzas that really caught my eye. Bodies wrapped within the scent of their intoxicating perfume. Fingers exploring the deepest fantasies of their wild lust exposed. Undressing each other with a French kiss as they began their exhibition. I would have had tickets for that if I could. Beautifully done, Frank. You see, I slipped these in where you don't notice. Cool. Very cool. Very cool.
Thank you, Katie.
And over to you.
And our third commenter is Gwen.
Yeah. I thought it was very engaging and wildly erotic in its sensual imagery. So I had great metaphors, and Frank always has just outstanding metaphors. So I really enjoyed it. He did a fantastic job.
Yes, he did. Thank you, Gwen.
He did.
And we're back. Yeah, I'm smiling so much my cheeks hurt just listening to Gwen try to tiptoe through the erotic tulip.
This is true.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, my face is red for you.
I don't think so. Yeah, for reals.
Okay, Kitty, and who's next?
We have Which I Am by Nunu Cardoso. And Gray, could you read this for us, please? Now, I know I'm not on mute. Hello.
Sorry, I was on mute.
That's okay. No problem.
This is called Which I Am by Nuno Cardoso. This page right here is my Chardis, a time machine that has a few screws, nuts, and bolts loose, scattered alongside my temper. My shut-eyes inner tick-tock clock, and the undying habit to see how much booze I can chug down in one night. You see, some of these poems are old, and some more than a decade or two. I wonder if I will ever make it to the age of 50, or if I will still be able to shit out poems in between the strokes of my fingers on this tombstone phone, and if people will still chomp them up as they do now with a silver dessert spoon on a hot July day while the flies circle the latest shit cream cone. Do you think I just gave birth to this one? Is it a dinosaur nut sack old? Have I been slicing it open with a scalpel and then with a mad needle stitched it back together to create my version of a poo-poo Frankenstein poem? Will people mean it when they call me the Doctor Who? Well, I just thought you would like to know that I write poems that you may not like to read, possibly because they are dusty ones or because they are fresh out of the oven, hot and steamy enough to burn your tongue, or most likely make you think I'm an asshole and poem. It says in his office,
great.
Does the title connect with the end?
Thank you, Gray. You did a fabulous job of Nuno Cardoso's poem. Let's get him some comments, and I am really going to apologize for my squeaky chair, but it's a squeaky chair. Laurent, I would love to know what you think of Nuno's poem.
This is a very clever contemporary piece. I had to laugh at, do you think I just gave birth to this one? Is a dinosaur nutsack old? Have I been slicing it open with a scalpel and then with a mad needle stitched it back together to create my version of a poo-poo Frankenstein's poem? Will people mean it when they call me Dr. Who? It's so inventive. It's so clever. Again, I love the vernacular in this thing. It's a poem for today. I don't think it could have been written in the past. Really excellent piece.
Thank you, Laurent. And you did a great job in reading this poem. What did you think, Gray?
You know, I really like his style. You know, it's in your face, it's raw, and it's real. You know, he speaks his mind, and he's not afraid to show the world who he is, even if he is an asshole. But no, I really enjoyed it. I'm sure he's not, but, you know, it's a great title for it. Excellent, right?
You know, I like how he starts it off, which I am, and then the next line is, this page right here is my shark desk. And so, you know, he just starts going into it, you know, with this time traveling of, you know, how the days go, how, you know, he feels like that it's a time machine that has a few screws, nuts, and bolts loose, scattered alongside my temper, my shut-eyes inner clock, and the undying habit to see how much booze I can chug down in one night. You see, some of my poems are old. Some are more than a decade or two. Then the next question he asked, and I wonder if I will ever make it to the age of 50. Well, you know, all of us wonder if, where we're going to be getting up in our ages. And, you know, just sometimes you got to put the bottle down. So, you know, your liver doesn't cook. You don't fry your liver because you can't live without your liver. And having surgery is just like, my God, why would you want somebody to gut you open like that? It just hurts too much. I'm not into surgery stitches, none of that no more. So I try to avoid it as much as possible. So, you know, you drink when you're celebrating with your family or you're taking your day off. There's nothing wrong with that. And then I liked, you know, how he says, you know, this is my, you know, this is how I write. My version of poo-poo Frankenstein poem will mean it when they call me Doctor Who. So I love his sarcasm. It's really entertaining. And what did you think, Katie?
It made me smile. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it. Very clever. That last stanza. Well, I just thought you would like to know that I write poems that you may not like to read, possibly because they are dusty ones or because they are fresh out of the oven, hot and steamy enough to burn your tongue, or most likely because you think I'm an asshole. As if I would think that. Well, as if I'd admit to thinking that. Definitely not. That would be terrible. I think this, as has been said, very clever, very now. I love the play on TARDIS at the beginning. Great. But a few screws, nuts and bolts loose. Welcome to my world. It's great to be here. Thank you so much. I enjoyed that.
Agreed. And we've got 20 minutes left, so let's keep going.
Okay. I thought I had one up, but obviously not. Because I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, yes, here
well,
we are.
Well, you just put Nuno's up, so we're ready for our next one. Dexter or something, since he, I don't know what happened, he dropped.
Oh, fine, I'm just getting myself organized again. When you go up and down a lot,
okay,
you kind of forget where you've been.
Yeah, you get lost.
Ah, yeah, exactly. So I hope I haven't already put this one up, but it's always been you. By Cedar Chapman. And Laurent, would you read this for us, please?
Certainly. It's always been you. How could I have known I was born broken, that photosynthesizing sunlight and growing deep roots in fertile soil just isn't enough? I long to walk, to soar, be wanted, to feel the ocean air and smell the salty sea, to have the spring breeze tantalize my skin, sending shivers and quivers down my thigh. There wasn't any recipe book, but I should have known from the day you walked into English class in your baby blue Daniel Hector sweater, ankle crop jeans, and white canvas keds. No socks, of course. I was but a small fry in a large fishbowl of pimples and hormones. A boy flexing his fins, trying to swim upstream with teenaged men, hoping you would notice a baby-faced halfling. Difficult to fathom why you didn't jump on a 5-foot, 100-pound frame, a flayed seedling carried by the wind, nurturing an involuntary 10-year friend's plan to whittle you down and woo you with each midnight sunrise phone call. We were walking along the shoreline, hands locked, gulls crooning, foamy waves caressing flattened sand. You saw me play beach volleyball, years spent studying Arnold Schwarzenegger's Modern Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding. No longer half the boy, yet half a man, incomplete, until that eventful New Year's Eve when I pushed our entire friendship to the center of the poker table and kissed you. So here we are, 3 kids later, approaching Freedom 55. I'm sleeping in wool socks, wearing a toque, whilst you're half-naked in your granny's star-shaped frost crystallizing on an open bedroom window. Gravity is cruel to our bodies. Your eyes sag, uncertain, even when knowing I am broken without you. It's always been you. I still shiver and quiver every night, perhaps with my sheepish, boyish grin. Tonight you'll reach for my thigh, and I'll smell the salty sea air again. End great poem.
Oh, you did a beautiful read of Cedar's poem. I was saying that he was writing to a quote by Milan Kundera, "Love is the longing for the half of ourselves we have lost." And he said he started writing this to keep it under 100 words, and he said he failed miserably. "I don't write love poems very often, so I had a lot to do, say. Hope you enjoy the longer read." And I did. I enjoyed the longer read watching this young man grow into a man that fell in love with the person he first saw in school and how he remembered every detail of her. But he was afraid she wouldn't, you know, look at him because he wasn't, you know, like the other boys. And, you know, he was half baby faced and he didn't know that she would pay attention to him. But he did. Eventually, they both grew older, and he kissed her, and now 3 kids later, and they're aging beautifully. But, you know, he says that even though he still feels broken, he says, "Even when knowing I am broken without you, it's always been you." You know, so, you know, it's just that person that fills the spot that has been empty for so long. This was just gorgeous. What did you think about the poem that you just read, Laurent?
That was magnificent. What a testimony to love to a person that you absolutely cannot live without. I don't think you could write a poem like this if that person didn't exist and you didn't feel exactly that way. I love the references to the small fry and the large fishbowl, kids who fall in love with women. You know, they just know that for some reason, girls their age are not attracted to boys his age. But the older guys. The women are like that. Right? Very frustrating.
Yeah,
the young. You know what I mean? Not to just lump everyone
yeah,
into
it's
one.
The, it, yeah, but, you know, a lot of girls do that in school. They like that testosterone, those beefy guys.
So it's very
yeah,
relatable in that,
all,
that aspect. So
yeah.
I enjoyed it.
So did I. Thank you. I enjoyed your comment, too. Gray? You had a lot of these love stories from your youth?
listen. No, I mean, you know, you don't usually see love poems from Peter. So this is a really nice change. You know, you can feel his, you can feel him in the write, you know, and his things that he went through. And, you know, there isn't any, wasn't any recipe book, but I should have known from the day you walked into English class with your baby blue Daniel Hector sweater, ankle broad jeans, and white canvas kid, no socks, of course. And, you know, he's a small fry in a big fish bowl of pimples and hormones. I mean, you know, I think we've all been there at some point. And, you know, I think it's beautiful that, you know, they ended up with three kids and, you know, they're growing old together, which is a beautiful thing. So congratulations, Cedar.
All righty. And we're ready for our next poem.
And we have, this is a SoundCloud, and this is Pop Her Balloons by Poeta de Cabra. So, Gray, I wonder if you could get that for us, please. Howdy.
All Will Be Well, a poem by Ben Hart.
Pop Her Balloons by Poeta de Cabra.
One.
Such a terrible, sad, and sorry plot. There's no difference from black and white. Hardly put two words together. Then it's a stutter. Spent most of a childhood playing in the gutter. For years been living in a relationship full of decay. Can't remember last time she saw the light of day. Lives on drugs and booze, topped up with a beating. Husband comes home and the scene keeps repeating. No idea of the time. Could it be midnight? Could it be noon? See the 99 black balloon she mistakes for the moon. Drugged fucked brain sees shadows casting filtered light. Bouncing off the balloons, she thinks it's actually moonlight. She hasn't been outside since God only knows when. Alcoholic husband keeps her locked inside the pig pen. Fills her with drugs he buys from a dealer up the road. Only really wants her there so he can empty his load. Remembers music she once heard, a catchy little tune. Balloons remind her, Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. She had 100 black balloons, now 99 left. As each one pops, she'll be frightened a little closer to death. Mongrel husband stole her life away, the oxygen thief. When Grim Reaper comes for her, it'll actually be a relief. He's in a bar somewhere doing some wheeling and dealing. She's on her back staring at black balloons up near the ceiling. Vacant is her brain. All she can do now is mumble and stare. Love drugs at the starts. Lots of iridescent colours everywhere. Then, along come the needles from drugs melted on spoons. Unfortunately, one of the needles will pop all of her balloons. End poem.
Yeah, I really want to thank Poeta for, I love his voice, for calling in to read his poem that he wrote. And, you know, just the sadness of this poem, of the life that, you know, people live and how they're treated within their own home, especially when you move in with somebody and, you know, you're thinking that your life is going to be better and it just gets worse. And I liked how he did this to the 99, German song, 99 Berlin. And I thought this was, you know, it just you know how drugs just swallow people's world and how they get caught in these violent relationships. What did you think, Katie?
I think I was looking at the wrong poem. I've got it now. Fine. Beautiful. Pop her balloon and look at those balloons. I thought this was great. No idea of the time. Could have been midnight, could have been noon. Yeah, see the 99 black balloon she mistakes for the moon. Drug fucked brain sees shadows casting filtered light. Bouncing off the balloon, she thinks it's actually moonlight. Ah, oh, wow. So much sadness and, oh my goodness, so much going on. Wow. Anyway, we get to that last end stanza, which is another doozy. Vacant is her brain. All she can do now is mumble and stare. Loved drugs at the start, lots of iridescent colours everywhere. Then along came the needles from drugs, melted on spoons. Unfortunately, one of the needles will pop all of her balloons. Ah, it's so sad. And inevitable. Part of our life now, isn't it? It's a sad, sad thing if somebody has got to that stage in their life. Because the start of it with the drugs, I'm pretty sure, must be mind-blowing. But then, as ever, there's never enough. The next one's got to be more. And it's a sad, sad thing.
I'm going to agree with what you say, because what ends up happening, sometimes it's one person is doing it for recreation because they haven't tried the drug before, and the other person is doing it because they've been doing it. They get other people to do it with them. And usually it's their girlfriend or friend, and before you know it, it just goes all downhill. I mean, because we all know what happens without going into details. Gray, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought he captured the prompt quite beautifully. He really took the 99 black balloons on the ceiling thing to another world. A world of despair and loneliness and heartbreak and just a tragic life lived and very sad and deeply engaging, right? Though he paints his picture quite dark, and it's a beautiful thing. So well done. Excellent SoundCloud as well.
Agreed. Thank you. And I'm ready for another poem.
Okay. Oh, I am on. Good. I thought I've always could keep checking that I'm not on mute. Because I'm there. I'm nearly there. There we are. My beautiful old PC has been very slow today. Sorry.
That's okay.
All Will Be Well by Ben Hart. Now, do we still have Dexter with us? Is it a SoundCloud?
No, Dexter. Yes, it's got a SoundCloud. Great.
Oh, cool.
Can you
Excellent.
Please play the SoundCloud?
Okay.
All Will Be Well, a poem by Ben Hart. All will be well, she says, to bring comfort back to a place and time. All will be well. Well, it doesn't feel like that. Sometimes I'd say, but that'd be lying, more like with every breath I take. Today I was offered cocaine and I didn't take it because I didn't want to die the same month I came in. And everyone I love has gone to bed again. Or maybe they're awake, away from here, a place and time. That felt smaller in the plague that is absence, the pugilist staring down his gloves. And if he'd won the fight, would he have been the one she loves? Would he have been the champion? I keep telling myself that I am Adam, not Snake, Kenobi, not Maul, but every day that I wake, I feel ripe for the fall, and Eve said just take her, but I'm not that tall. She's the moonlight and I am the cold. And that she loves everything I'm not, but I am nothing at all, so she loves only dust. She loves. She loves leaving. She loves leaving on Sunday. She loves leaving. She loves. She loves that I am an angry drunk, and that I plan on dying young. She loves me for the smoke in my lungs, and the pain in my eyes, and the black of my heart, and the way that I walk, and all I ache and call art, and the god of my youth, and the love I owe you, and the way I look nude, and the dirt on my nails, and the earth that I hail, and the people I fail, and the pain in my eyes, and the way I will die, the way I will die. How she loves the pain in my eyes. All will be well, what a lie. You couldn't have loved me for a night. Watch the dawn, watch something rise. Watch how it changes the look in your eyes. All would be well. This is the life. And I want one moment that transcends what God intended before he ended. End poem.
Thank you so much, Ben. You know, I love hearing you read your poetry. You can hear, I like the music you choose for the background, and I like hearing the emotions that I hear all throughout these words, where you're just exposing yourself with the, you know, feeling and the, you know, to be loved, knowing that you are broken and to be loved is such a soul-lifting moment in someone's life. And I liked where he says, in the pain in my eyes and the black of my heart and the way that I walk and all I ache and heart, the God of my youth, the love I owe you, and the way I look nude and the dirt in my nails and the earth that I hail and the people I failed and the pain in my eyes and the way I will die, the way I'll die, how she loved the pain in my eyes. You know, you can hear his anger. You can hear his pain. You can hear the deep sadness in his imagery. This is just fabulous. What did you think, Katie?
Excuse me. This was so, it's very, very sad. Full of so much pain.
Yes, it is.
And I really loved the way you portrayed that in your voice, Ben. It was, it added so much to, and the picture you painted. Oh my goodness me, that picture, the colors. Oh, so gorgeous. Yes, I thought it was so well done. I don't know if this is truth or fiction for you. I hope it is fiction. I hope you don't feel so terribly bad. But it's never an easy thing. Never an easy thing for emotions to be played with or played on. And if someone doesn't love you when you love them, then that is the worst feeling. That is the worst in the world. So
yeah,
I'm wishing you all the best, and I'm sending you a big smile. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. And Gray Eye, is your next comment?
Yeah, I apologize for having that SoundCloud up so loud. You know, it was a beautiful read. You know, it's very evocative of the way his read was. You know, it really captured the emotions that he felt in this, and you could really feel those emotions as he read it. So it takes time. It's a wonderful job.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Gray. Excellent comment. We're not going to have enough time for another poem. It said we had 60 seconds. So I want to thank Phil, Katie, Gwen, Laurent, Dexter, Gray Eyes, Hope, Silver Tree, and Frank for joining us either on the phone lines or the board and adding your fantastic poetry. We love you, and whatever poems were not read this week, we will definitely get to them next Monday. All right, you have a good night, everybody. Buenas noches. Besitos a todos. Love and kisses to everyone. Love you guys. Good night.
Much love, everybody. Good night.
My Gray. I don't know what happened to Dexter, but I did miss him. So hopefully, how many did we get done? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Oh, we did good. We did really good. I can't hear you anymore. I don't know what just happened. Katie? Can you hear me, sweetheart? I don't know what's happening. What's happening? Okay. What is wrong with you? Okay, let's turn it off. Hmm.